Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another goddamn edition of Deep Fat Fry.
Goddamn motherfucking edition.
The best
son of a bitchin' cocksucking show on the goddamn motherfucking twat licking bitch smacking planet.
Fat deep.
You know what I'm saying, you motherfuckers? The fucking best show that ever fucking existed in the fucking history of fucking planet fucking Earth. TJ caught Biden.
I believe it was James T.
TJ caught COVID 78, dude.
Hey, you gotta be there.
He caught COVID. He caught the COVID.
And listen,
the co-Biden.
Oh, listen, he's got the bio.
You're a dog face lion pony dog soldier. You get out of here.
That's true.
With your malarkey.
Oh my God, dude.
That's a lot of malarkey, boy.
Do you understand how insufferable TJ is going to be as an old man? Can you even fucking imagine?
That's a lot of fucking malarkey,
what do you mean?
Boy.
Like then.
Just saying.
Like, you're full of shit.
For every bit as insufferable as he is now, think about when TJ literally just loses his mind and he's just babbling. Oh my God.
Hey, you fucking goddamn dog face lion pony
Scotty,
soldier.
We've got to build a windmill now.
Scotty's going to be the aggressive old man.
Scotty be like,
that's constantly chasing people off his lawn and
get out of here, you piece of shit.
Talking about how back in his day, if he was 20 years younger, he'd whoop your fucking ass.
Drone comes to deliver a package. He's out there with a baseball bat hitting it.
God damn these fucking buzzard trash.
Dude, I hope I'm that cool.
Fighting with his appliances like your dad used to do. Remember that shit? You told me about that?
Yeah.
This fucking toaster! Why it burned my toaster dead die? Goddamn piece of fucking shit! When I was 15, toasters was made right. Toasted your bread each time, both sides, not a problem. You don't even put butter on it for you, too.
We've regressed.
I'm gonna be the sad old man in a home, laying with a blanket across his lap, looking out a window and wistfully remembering the good old days, you know? That'll be me.
That's cool. You now.
I know. That's why I know. That's how I know that I'm going to be that old man. I can already see it's already happening.
But he's saying, you know, when he can't take care of himself, when he's in there like, here you go, peaches, have some applesauce.
Someone rolled me closer to the window so I could see outside.
Somebody's going to keep bringing me chamomile tea and shit because I can't, you know, I can no longer express that I don't like tea. You know what I mean? So I
have some tea, Grandpa.
He always takes a sip or two of it, so we just give him chamomile tea. We figure that's what he likes, you know?
I hate this.
I can't even, I'm so lost, I can't even do that. I can't even be like, I don't like tea. I can't form that anymore. I'm just, you know.
Thanks.
My life is just a blur of fantasy.
Tea.
That's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Damn.
I'm looking forward to those days.
Well, I guess no one gets a happy ending, do they, Paul?
I consider that a happy
you
ending.
You get it in a massage parlor, yep. Too.
That's a happy ending in my
usually
world.
Usually the Asian ones. Well, that's
a
like
sad
really
ending is like you die looking at your own guts because somebody blew you up in a Walmart or something.
It's like, damn.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I died in a Walmart. Why?
That's the most patriotic place to die, though, when you think about it.
Yeah.
You die inside a fucking Walmart, a store filled with shit made in third world countries that you're buying for cheap.
That's a sad indictment of the United States.
God bless this country.
This is a great damn
country. If you're going to die somewhere, die in a Walmart.
If you're going to die, do it in Walmart.
That's part of my no Walmart policy. And number one on the list is...
If you don't go to Walmart, you can't die in Walmart.
I can't die in a mass shooting in a Walmart. I'm excited. I refuse to go to one.
Yeah.
So I'm good.
Scotty's legit.
So this show tonight is like one of the things that interests me most. This is like one of the things that I find to be the most interesting.
Big dicks.
I got that one in the works too.
No, didn't we already do a Big Dicks show?
No.
Oh, that's right. You were going to do one.
I was Chelsea,
but you couldn't take the wide load.
Yeah. Chelsea cucked him, dude.
TJ couldn't take that dick, dude.
Couldn't take it. Too big.
Gotta do it on vaginas.
Dick too big.
Gotta do it on vagina, TJ.
But no, this is the type of shit, like the care and the energy and the fervor that I see people pour into like modern politics, especially people that follow like the day-to-day politic bullshit.
Yeah.
This is where
us helpless and hapless political junkies.
Yeah. What little bit of that energy I have, I long ago decided I wasn't going to dedicate that fucking shit to politics anymore. So this is what I do. When my mind wanders, this is the type of shit I like to think about, and I like to think about different paths to it. So we're going to talk about we've done a show about the end of the world.
As we know it.
Like all the different ways that we likely will meet our horrible and tragic end. But we've never done a show on possible futures for humanity. Let's set aside the presumption that a super volcano is going to blow up and kill us all, or an asteroid is going to come out of nowhere and kill us all. And let's talk a little bit about the possibilities of humanity.
Which paths could we take?
The different paths that humanity could take in the distant and super distant futures.
Yeah.
That's what I like to think about. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
Cool. I like it.
The first option that I want to put up for discussion is the status quo, which basically presumes that we're not going to see this giant and radical shift, that we will figure out somehow to make, you know, how to make our modern way of life sustainable. Technology may change around us, but the fundamental way that we interact with our government and our day-to-day lives is not going to change.
I always felt like when people made movies or wrote books or about the future, usually it was an exaggeration of people's usually criticisms of the present. Like, you know, they just assume that every trend that they identify in the present world that they live in is going to continue on
forever
in perpetuity.
Evolving and changing.
And not only that, but it's a huge way that they look at human beings. So imagining a human being that doesn't share that perspective is almost impossible to people.
Right.
Because it's so rooted in what they know and how they were raised and what they were raised around.
So, like, you know, somebody who's hyper-concerned about, you know, commercialism and stuff is probably going to imagine a future where commercialism has gotten even worse and everything's an advertisement and everything is just, you know, about that. If someone thinks, like, oh, we live in a degenerate time, they're probably going to make the future even more degenerate and, you know, whatever. It's usually a matter of, like, whatever criticisms I have of the present are just going to get infinitely worse in the future, because it's like they want to show you this dystopian future as a cautionary tale. Like, if we don't change our ways now, we're heading towards
they're projecting that their own anxiety and fear
into their future.
Yeah. Right.
And that's kind of tends to be how most people write the future. Now, there's exceptions to that and stuff, but I think that this status quo future is kind of just the embodiment of that, right? Where it's just like you take the present and you just look at the trends that you see in the here and now and say, what if that just continued on? Maybe not in perpetuity, but for a long time.
It's basically,
and what would that future look like?
It's basically in the preface of what you're talking about, because when we said it, it's like we have to continue on in this path. So, because I mean, usually these cataclysmic changes, it's like the fall of Western civilization, like the Roman Empire has fallen or something. Like, you need this big event. So to assume that, you know, this is going to happen, we have to assume that we somehow can make all this stuff work. So just discussing the status quo is almost astonishing, because at that point, if it's 100 years now and we're still living the way we're living, there must have been some amazing technological developments or something that was like, oh, we were wrong and we were able to reverse climate change, or we're suddenly able to just create way more food.
Now, this status quo possible future doesn't eliminate the possibility of some big changes in the power structure. Like, this could happen and China could take over the world.
Right.
Or be the dominant force in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
This could happen and China could collapse like the Soviet Union.
Yeah. Right.
And there could be a new United States ascendancy in the world.
Not necessarily precluding the possibility of some major world events shaking things up a little bit.
Right. What I'm talking about is what fundamentally doesn't change is how citizens interact with their government and the basic quality of life that we're able to provide.
Roughly the same.
That remains roughly the same. Little, you know, government, big power shifts might happen on the government stage, but when it comes to how the clients interact with the fucking, you know, society at large, that remains the same.
So what do you see when you think about that? Because we're all probably going to have different interpretations of what that means.
Well, another thing that this doesn't, this hypothesis doesn't eliminate is how, whether or not it comes to like a revolution or not, how do people feel about the status quo being the only available way of living their lives? Are they contented with it and so pacified from any kind of violent uprising because they want to preserve it?
I mean, if we're talking about the true status quo, I think that you have a massive amount of discontent that's either being redirected or distracted away from, or, you know, there's these illusory mechanisms whereby things could change, but you actually try to pursue them and they just lead to these like tragic dead ends that totally sap the enthusiasm out of people.
But that next generation always has its hopeful moment, right?
So they always think like we're going to be the ones to turn it around. We're going to be the one, like, you know, every generation's got like, it's like, oh, I'm this transformative figure or this transformative movement
right. That's
going to change things. But that's behind the scenes, status quo, but it doesn't.
Right. The status quo remains the same. Some little token legislations get passed. Some little token social issues get dealt with. But the economic reality remains the same. The power structure of the world remains the same. And the question, I think, when you talk about possible futures like this, is which way is the wind going to blow with people? Are we going to become more docile or more captive to this cyclical generational, we're the change people, and then it never happens, and oh God, now I'm old and I'm dying now, so it doesn't really matter because the new generation, you know, do we become aware of that?
Well, change is like a nebulous concept that people get behind, but if you actually sit down and talk to people like, well, what should change? That's when the disagreement starts.
Right.
You know, so it's very difficult to say. I mean, like, people agree in these big ideas, but the actual energy and force of will it takes to make those ideas go from a vision to a reality is so difficult.
So the question as I see it then is, do we become aware of this, as Scotty put it, this big idea that we're all laboring and having disillusions under? Or do we just become more pacified generation to generation and more accepting of, well, you know, change, we tried.
I think it's,
we gave it a shot.
I think that you'll continue to see, I think, you know, we'll basically be pacified with incrementalism. I think you'll see little concessions made, but for every concession that's made, they're going to fucking figure out some other thing to take. It's like, oh yeah, well, we're going to give you, okay, you guys have been fighting for universal health care for a while, so we're going to give you that, but we're going to take even more civil liberties, and we're going to spy on you even more, and we're just going to put cameras in your house, and we're going to chip you, and we're going to do all this other stuff.
The question I have, though, because to me, that kind of lifestyle is fundamentally disgusting to think about.
Yeah, exactly.
But look at the current fucking generation.
Right.
And I'm not trying to be a boomer here, but they're absolutely enraptured by their technological devices.
Right.
They like to, a lot of them seek to live very publicly. They put their every thought, their every vacation picture out there for the world, presumably, if they could have that kind of audience to see.
Right.
So in my mind, they're naturally going to be more accepting to that trade-off.
Right.
Less civil liberties, less privacy. Because what's fucking privacy? Who wants to be alone?
I'm scared.
Privacy is dead. And I mean, and the greatest trick that was pulled with all this stuff was that people for years were like, the government's going to come in and force you. You're going to fucking be forced to do it. But just make a fucking wonderful. Yeah, but make a wonderful device like a smartphone and people just give it away. Because most people don't even fuck. Like, look, if you read Edward Snowden's book, which I encourage everyone to fucking do, like, or if you don't want to just trust him, like, there's so many sources online. Like, look at how the bulk data collection, look at all this stuff. And people are willingly doing it. And it's going to get to the point where it's not even going to be optional. Like, they're going to make everything like, oh, there's an app for that. Oh, you have to use the app. Oh, you have to connect this way. And that means you're going to have one of these devices. Ergo, you're going to be tracked. It's inevitable.
So another wing of this status quo before we move on is the idea that we should structure society to beat it. So not just give over to it, not necessarily a violent revolution, but a restructuring of society in order to beat it. And a lot of those people are, they think that the key to doing that is to reduce technology, to literally start getting rid of some of the technologies that we have come to rely on in our day-to-day lives. And
this
absolutely.
This is Paul's buddy here.
Yeah, my good friend Ted, Teddy Boy over here. We used to call him Teddy Boy back in the day.
Good old Teddy Boy. He's a teddy bear.
The name for people that think like this is Neo-Luddite. So a Luddite is a person that kind of eschews technology or poo-poos modern technology. In some extreme cases, advocates for getting rid of them. But it's kind of an old idea.
And in some even more extreme cases, sends bombs to people with the intent of somehow prompting that change to happen.
So this is kind of the modern era's version of being a Luddite. And Ted Kaczynski was very, very specific about
the Unabomber we're talking about.
Yeah, the Unabomber.
In case anyone is confused.
Right. The Unabomber, of course. I'm going to read a little bit from his manifesto here.
Okay.
It starts with the premise that the Industrial Revolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. So he kind of sees it happening right around industrialization, and everything that he saw that was horrible in society was just an outcropping from that.
This is the little cabin he lived in here.
Yeah, this is him standing next to his little cabin. He moved, he was a professor.
Yeah, at one point.
In California. And he just kind of all of a sudden moved to the middle of nowhere in Montana in this little kind of shack, lived a very utilitarian existence.
Right. And he even said that this little cabin was not, even this was not isolated enough for his taste.
Right. Which is, you know, why he turned violent, honestly, is because he realized once he got up to Montana that he was still so dependent on the structure as it existed, and he was still so close to all this bullshit. You know, he still had neighbors that would totter by, and he still had, you know what I mean? He couldn't get away from the system that he hated, and so that turned him to this kind of violent revolutionary type of thinking where he started mailing these bombs off to intellectuals that were advocating for different things and wrote this huge manifesto. He says that the continued development of technology will worsen the situation and advance towards its logical conclusion, which is complete control over everything on Earth, including human beings and all other important organisms. Now, a lot of people would hear that and go, what a crazy fuck. But is that not what's slowly but surely happening? I mean, we talked about it during our status quo segment about how people are becoming ever more tolerant of constant surveillance. Is that not a move in the direction that Ted Kaczynski is talking about here? Literally taking control of the populace, controlling what you can say, what you can wear, where you can be, knowing where you are at every fucking second of every fucking day, knowing who you talk to and what the contents of that conversation were. That's what he's talking about, and it's already happened.
Yeah, there's just a huge amount of data on every person. It's like, you know, hey, what are Paul's sexual proclivities? What does he think about this? You know, so it's like, they have this whole entire profile built around you as a person. And any time under a surveillance state like that, you could just, I mean, look how many laws every day a citizen probably breaks so many laws they don't even realize or think, oh, no one cares. I took this movie or whatever it is.
Plus it makes you a more exploitable consumer too, because they have such a good profile of you built up that it's like, you know, half the time they're trying to sell you shit that you don't need. Well, before you even need it, before you want it or need it, they fucking create the desire within you. It's like, here you go. You want this. It's like, oh, I do. Okay. Yeah, I guess I do.
It's all these advanced algorithms, dude. They just look at you. They look at what you've bought and they can figure things out about you.
They know your medical problems. They know, you know, your political beliefs. They know every fucking thing about you.
So Kaczynski said that he decided to advocate a revolution against the industrial system. He said this is not to be a political revolution. Its object will be to overthrow not governments, but the economic and technological basis of the present society.
Fat fucking chance of that happening.
So it's the Butlerian Jihad from the Dune
universe.
Yeah,
that is true, yeah.
It's this idea that machines and industry have taken over our every moment of our lives. And the advertising that TJ was just talking about is a huge part of that. If there's nobody to receive the things that the machines are making, then there's no point for the machines to be there. So keeping people constantly consuming the output of these machines is tantamount. Am I wrong about that?
I don't think so. I really don't.
I don't have a counter argument.
And so the idea becomes like this is the violent revolution idea. This is the, we're not trying to establish a political, you know, this is not about LGBTQ rights. This is not about the treatment of women. This is not a political or identitarian type of movement.
Right.
This is a technology is fucking killing us. And we have to dismantle the fucking yoke that's been put around our neck.
Yeah, this is like a battle more like for like the soul of humanity, the destiny of humanity, what kind of direction we go in.
It's humanity versus the corporations.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he's talking about. It's like standing up to these giant business interests that we all know. We talk about it all the time as if it's just a fucking foregone conclusion that the natural order of things is for these giant fucking corporate entities
to be on top.
To be on top of you, pushing down on you, giving you an ever smaller slice of the pie, and feeding you bullshit your entire life. How do you stop that? I think Ted Kaczynski's right that it can't be a political revolution. If you try and sow politics into this, it becomes mush. It becomes interpretable. It has to be directed. It has to be like, we're going to tear down the fucking Walmart in every city. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that it's going to be inherently political no matter what, because people are going to bring their identity politics into it. People are going to invariably bring political ideology into it. And I mean, honestly, a lot of our political identities today are so contingent upon the spread of technology in the first place. Like, I think that at this point, you know, there's no untangling humanity from its technology. I think that, you know, he makes some points about the downsides of technology. He's ignoring a lot of upsides of technology. And really, he's talking about, I mean, unless there's a cataclysmic event that sends us hurtling back in time to this sort of agrarian society, like, this just isn't going to happen.
I mean, just the amount of technology that's involved in just feeding a population this large. If you say, let's eschew all this technology, then you're basically saying there's going to be massive starvation.
There's going to be, I mean, you can't sustain the population numbers, which, you know, I don't even think our population should be as high as it is.
No.
But, I mean, you're talking about, we're going to be, you're going to lose a shit ton of modern convenience. Not everyone wants to live in a fucking cabin in the woods and hunt fucking game and be at the mercy of the elements and all this other stuff.
That's a deeper question, though, because you ask yourself this, right?
Yeah.
We know that humans are animals.
Sure.
We know that for a profound amount of humanity's history, we lived just like that.
Sure.
Yes.
Hunter-gatherer tribes.
Yeah. Right. And are we in the position to look back at those people through our modern lens and go like, they would want what we have? Because that's what we're saying. You're not just talking about yourself with this. Talking about future generations that are born into a world where it's not mechanized. It's not industrialized.
Sure.
They live in smaller, agrarian, self-contained communities that farm the land and provide for the common defense on a local level.
I mean, I think we can infer what decision they made, because they got those generations led us to this point. So every piece of new technology that came along
was embraced.
Humanity embraced without question.
Sure.
Because if this makes...
Like when the printing press came about, it wasn't like people like...
Another thing is we have to ask, like, where do we draw the line? Because, I mean, a fucking spear is a piece of technology. A bow and arrow is a piece of technology. Is he just drawing the line at the Industrial Revolution? Like, that's when it went too far?
That is where his line was drawn.
We just talked the other day about the fucking, the disgusting conditions of pre-industrial society.
Right.
People shitting in this. I mean, like, it's a miserable fucking existence. Now, maybe the people who are born and raised into it can't tell the difference, and they think it's fine. But there's people in this society who don't even see the problems of this either.
Right.
So, I mean, like, we can't really necessarily talk about the... I mean, like, everything's obviously relative.
The contention that Kaczynski is making is that we were wrong to go down the path we went, and it needs to be corrected.
Do you think it's even feasible?
It's possible.
I think it's totally fucking possible.
But it's, look, you know, an individual, I mean, which is, that's all he is. I mean, you can make an argument, but it's a cultural thing. I mean, as a society, we've made these changes. Now, by and large, there's people that eschew those changes and say, no, I don't want to drive a car. I want a horse and buggy, like always.
Like Amish people.
Yeah, you have people that, you know, just by their very way of life, don't adopt those practices.
I mean, that Amish are a good example. That Rumspringa thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so Amish people are given the option when they're teenagers to move out and go live like we do.
Right.
And then come back and everything's forgiven. And a profound amount of them do.
Right.
A huge majority of Amish children that go on Rumspringa come right back to the Amish fucking community.
Of course they do.
Yeah. So, well, right. So what I'm saying is it's not as simple as
it's a bullshit test. It's a bullshit test because what you're saying, if you decide to go and leave the, you're saying, I forsake my family.
Right.
I forsake every social connection I've ever had throughout my life. I forsake your social about my upbringing. It's like a false test. It's like you get to go in the world. This is what the world has to offer you.
Yeah, your safety net.
From a naive perspective of indoctrination and the knowledge that if you choose this, you're sacrificing literally everyone you've ever known to go out into a world that's completely unfamiliar to you. But so it's not a fair test. It's a bullshit test.
If they're living in pig
Rumspringa,
shit, though.
Rumspringa is a terrible fucking, it's not legit. It's bullshit.
I think that I understand what you're saying. I understand the immense social pressure of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, you know, I caution you to think you're saying that our fucking society is so much better now than it was when most people lived that way.
I'm saying it's better in many ways.
Right.
I mean, look, like everything in life, you know, I mean, not everything. Some things are just all downside. There's very few things that are all upside. But our relationship with technology, it's, of course, it's fraught with peril and sacrifices and things that we've given up to embrace that. But, you know, we gave them up for a reason. We made trades. Now, maybe we made a deal with the devil in some instances. But, I mean, like, once again, I got to ask where you fucking draw the line. It's like, okay, do you want to till a field through backbreaking labor or do you want to have a fucking tractor? You know? And people said, hey, I would rather have the tractor because it's fucking easier. I can yield more crops. I can more people.
That led to gigantic factory farms.
It did.
With Frankencorn growing in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And these giant entities gobbling up these big farmer conglomerates.
Giant conglomerations.
You know what I mean?
That rule the fucking, the roots.
Yeah, there's farmers now, I don't know if you guys know this, but farming equipment that's like older, like from the 70s and the 80s and stuff, is highly valuable because now these big companies for these farmers that do still exist, they have to hack their own shit to make it work, or they have to pay out like these outrageous prices to get stuff fixed.
Right, you can't. They're like Lamborghinis and shit. You can't work on them.
And there's other farmers too now that I mean, like are just paid not to grow anything,
or paid to grow things and then allow them to rot on the field.
Right.
I mean, corn and ethanol is a big example. It's like basically just a subsidy for farmers. Like,
so we're not. I mean, like we're not managing our resources in the greatest way.
Well, you wouldn't think we would be because the fucking goal is not to harness our resources and manage them.
It's to maximize profits.
It's to corporations. Right. That's so. The entire goal of our society is anti-human survival.
Because, I mean, think about this. Like, if all of us have, like, in a capitalist system, we all have our bank accounts. So we look at that. So we look, we look at roughly, these are our resources. And it's so strange that you could get someone to understand that, like, well, yeah, I'm broke. I have no money. But it's like we don't look at all the natural resources and stuff we need to actually survive. Like, how much clean drinking water do we have?
But a lot of people are going to die if you eschew technology as well.
Well, no, I'm not even saying that technology should be eschewed. I'm just saying that, you know, I feel like the technology, it's like technology is good, but obviously there's downsides. Like, I think it's also, you have to look at the ethical questions about what technology can do. Because there's technology that obviously that can just, I mean, we're getting to the point where, you know, you're going to have technology that can just go kill people like that.
Right.
It's not going to be, I mean, look at those dogs.
Right.
Imagine if you put weapons on those things.
What happens when you can send a fucking nanovirus or something into someone's house?
What happens if you can write a software program to make the smartphone's battery go fucking crazy and heat up and explode?
Well, right. Fuck that. Programming your dreams. When you're hooked up in a fucking cybernetic way to the mass internet, they can be talking to your brain while you sleep.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we all know how suggestible people are in that state.
Oh yeah, and I mean, of course, they already want to do that. I mean, that's why, you know, you fall asleep watching commercial television. Those commercials will creep into your fucking subconscious.
Of course. And so it's about literally, as Ted Kaczynski was saying, taking control of every person on the planet and all important life forms. So it's we're doing that to the animals too. He talked about all other important species. Look at what we've done to the fucking dairy cow. We've turned it into a monster. It's literally incapable of living on its own.
Right.
Because it's been so genetically fucked with that it those cows buckle under the fucking weight of their own udders.
I mean, chickens, pigs, these factory farms, of course, crazy conditions. And like the amount of genetic modifications and, you know, weird breeding that they've done.
Oh, dude.
To create these abominations, basically.
Okay.
Well, to feed this ever-growing population.
You know that I love to make
chicken
wings.
I guess population growth has slowed down.
Well, talking about the factory farming shit, you know I love fucking make chicken wings, right?
Oh, yeah.
You bought that pack of chicken wings, yes. And I bought the pack.
Uh-huh.
And my pack is like, you know, the Whole Foods, you know, rated, right. And blah, 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 so it's organic.
Right.
Long story short. And you bought just whatever they have at the fucking store.
Yeah.
Look at the difference between those are the wings you bought, and the wings I bought are, like, tiny.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, a couple bites of meat. The ones TJ got were just like, they were fucking huge. He got like 6-7 pounds of meat. He got like about three times the amount of meat off these chickens.
Right, because they're breeding them to be gigantic. And
yeah, they can't even stand up.
Yeah. They're not even like, as a life form, they're basic. I mean, they're not.
I mean, just think about it. In 1,000 years, they may have conglomerated all these animals, and there's just this big moaning pink goo, you know, and it's got a tit coming out one side of it and a ham hock on the other.
We've already started to just clone. I mean,
culture meat. Yeah.
Yeah. It's meat that's just grown. It's not even they've just cut out the middleman of like it's pretty.
There's been an explosion in fake meat.
I mean, yeah, they've cut out the like we're not talking about something with a brain anymore at this point. We're just talking about like we're just literally growing parts and selling them to you.
Sweet.
Well, and basically what they do is imitate...
Which actually is at least a little bit more ethical because there's no actual suffering involved.
Well, beyond me, what all these companies are doing is working on making it have that, like, kind of like myoglobin, like that, like those enzymes and stuff, mm-hmm. where it gives you that feel of, like, real beef. And I mean, they're just going to get better
Fake
and better.
Meat has gotten a lot more convincing as of late.
I guarantee you probably the next 10 or 15 years they're going to make
it's
shit
It's probably going to start getting indistinguishable. Yeah. You know what I haven't seen yet is, like, a really good, like, steak or anything, but...
So... Before we move on from Ted Kaczynski, he had some ideas about how the revolution needed to be started.
Okay.
He said, first, we must work to heighten the social stresses within the system so as to increase the likelihood that it will break down or be weakened sufficiently so that a revolution against it becomes possible. So this is how he's talking about accelerationism,
right.
Like accelerating the bad, kind of almost accepting the bad and allowing it to get so repugnant and bad and incompetent and incapable of fulfilling people's basic needs that's how you get your apolitical revolution.
Right.
It's just like, I got no bread on my fucking table anymore. Right. I can't support my family. I can't support myself. Then people will take to the streets. So he doesn't like really talk about, yeah, let's all fucking get together as things are now and destroy the fucking Walmart in town.
Right.
He talks about letting things get so bad that people, you know, rightfully see who's done it to them.
I mean, that's probably the most pragmatic view of revolution is when people can't eat, they can't meet their basic needs. So it's like, what do they have to lose?
He says, second, it's necessary to develop and propagate an ideology that opposes technology and the industrial society if and when the system becomes sufficiently weakened. So he talks about, you know, that needs to be the if there's a political statement, it needs to be that these giant fucking companies are evil. And when left to their own devices, like they had been, they will enslave you and continue to give you crappier and crappier shit for more and more of your quote unquote paycheck. And such an ideology will help to ensure that if and when industrial society breaks down, its remnants will be smashed beyond repair. So that the system cannot be reconstituted, the factory should be destroyed, technical books burned, etc. So he was talking about getting people so behind the idea that technology was to blame for what was going on with them that they wouldn't even abide it anymore. They wouldn't even want that knowledge anymore, that every piece of technology would just be systematically dismantled. And
I mean, we kind of had something like this happen before in the Dark Ages.
Sure.
When a lot of Roman knowledge and stuff was destroyed, Library of Alexandria burned and stuff like that.
And knowledge of how to run a cleaner and more efficient society was just lost.
Yeah, right. And I mean, it wasn't totally lost. It did survive in little... I mean, you're not going to... I mean, going
in
from,
wider society, it was from, as good as
going
lost.
From a,
it was
a strong, a strong, like, sort of centralized government to a bunch of, like, fiefdoms and feudal states.
And people fighting and, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, some of that knowledge did actually survive. A lot of it survived through the Middle East and stuff and was recovered.
Ah, I see you are also a fan of Spaceship Earth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it did. I mean, it's true.
I know. I'm just...
But, yeah.
It's reminding me of that.
You know, well, humanity kind of... forsake that. It basically exactly the conditions you described too. It was like society broke down to this point. There wasn't necessarily they didn't necessarily turn on their technology, but they certainly, you know, they were overrun by the barbarians, quote unquote, that destroyed a lot of the knowledge and infrastructure and how it was built and how it was maintained and all that stuff. But of course, like, you know, when you talk about like Roman society and stuff, you're talking about a society that's, you know, not only ultra decadent, but built largely upon like slave labor and stuff like that.
Actually, a shoe technology because slave labor was so plentiful.
Yeah, I mean,
so I guess Ted Kaczynski might have liked Rome better.
I don't think he probably would have.
Probably not.
Probably also found that system distasteful.
It's more in line with what he believed, though.
Ted Kaczynski's ideology is inherently humanistic. It's about increasing humanity's happiness and ability to deal with its environment. It's about returning to this ideal that he has in his head that might not exist at all. But there are other people that would be called neo-Luddites, at least in ideology.
Really? Because I honestly find him to be a sociopathic narcissist that's trying to shove his beliefs onto the world violently.
I mean, isn't that just... That's a convenient way of tying off his political observations. That's what everybody did with him. Oh, he's a fucking crazy fuck.
I think people were right to do that. I mean, this is a guy who decided to build bombs and to send them to people who...
Who fucking cares?
They had no fucking involvement
in this.
How does
that change what he has to say on the subject of technology and how it's fucking...
It absolutely changes it.
It doesn't.
It changes it 100%.
I separate the man from the deed and shit. His words are his words. And if you read his manifesto, there's a lot of fucking correctness going on.
He could have some points. But, I mean, like, at the end of the day, he's not a fucking humanist. Humanists don't blow people up.
Well, I mean, you know, in his mind, he was a humanist.
Maybe. Maybe in his deluded mind.
I think his goal overall was a humanistic goal.
No, I think it was a selfish goal. I think he personally wanted to live in a world that eschewed technology, and he couldn't stand that other people didn't agree with him.
Well, there you go. A controversial figure. Another controversial figure. I didn't pull a picture of him. I kind of wish I had. He's a guy who I like to throw around.
Are we ready for this?
Yeah. That's okay. Fine. You can leave that up. There's a, I guess he would be a neo-Luddite, kind of a radical environmentalist philosopher named Derek Jensen. I always name
drop. Oh, yeah. You've talked about him.
He's my favorite living philosopher. And he has he's my Wittgenstein. he has a philosophy that's way more based around the health of the planet.
Right.
He thinks that humans are secondary.
Radical environmentalism.
Right. And a lot of what he preaches involves taking down existing infrastructure that harms the environment. So smog, belching, pollution, and dams that destroy local fish populations.
Yeah, roadways that impede migratory activities.
Look, talk about this wall that's being slowly... but probably not surely built.
Oh, right. Devastating.
That's also devastating migration routes and damaging rivers and stuff like that.
But he has an interesting kind of divergence because he's not necessarily anti-technology.
Right.
He's a big supporter of green technology and the idea of integrating our technology with the earth. And it's a way that things might turn out for us that I don't think people think about a whole lot. What about like a Garden of Eden? See, a lot of times people look at the Earth in the future, they think of something like, you know, that last picture.
This giant cybernetic ball where all nature has been squeezed out of the equation, basically. Right.
And I think it's equally possible that technology could go the other way.
Right.
There's a kind
of isn't something like this the kind of, I mean, like people make fun of the Green New Deal and stuff like that. And that those kind of ideas is like, oh, this is ridiculous. And they want us to give up this and they want us to give up that. But isn't this kind of what that sort of legislation is sort of aiming towards, is like we need to build an infrastructure that's not damaging to our environment, but works like,
or at least minimize
simpatico with it,
minimize the damaging footprint of our species to the greatest extent possible. Integrate with nature wherever possible.
Why would people not want to live in a healthier environment? And we saw this with,
let's make it clear, it's not people that oppose that. It's fucking giant. Giant corporations that oppose. And some people do think they're fed all this bullshit.
Get brainwashed.
They want to fucking take away your cows for farting, and they want to stop you from air travel, and they want to do this, and they want to do that. And it's just, you know, they get all these lies fucking crammed into their skull. To the point, and they're too stupid to fucking tell.
I'm not
the
sure where I saw this. Maybe it was on this show. Maybe it was just in my personal life. But the other thing with Singapore, that they remember they basically like cleaned the rivers out around the cities, mm-hmm. and like these like platypuses, and it was like some animal, like I remember it was some river animal that was like returning and thriving in a major metropolitan area.
Right.
So it's like that philosophy has already been shown that it's actually way better for the animals in the ecosystem. It's way better for the people. It's way better for their mental health and their mental state to have spaces like this, because cities actually stress people out a lot, because, like, you know, obviously the human brain has not evolved much in 50,000 years, so we're used to seeing more, like, outdoor spaces. Mm-hmm. And something like this, I think, a pragmatic one, just to have a place of, like, where it's more serene.
I mean, but what does that come at the cost of? No fucking monster truck rallies. I can't imagine the WWE, you know.
I mean, you know, look.
So what's the cost of serenity?
Right. It's just a matter of, like, what are you willing to sacrifice to gain? I mean, you trade certain things for others, right? You live on a more sustainable planet. You know, there's more green spaces.
Yeah, maybe you can't. Maybe, you know, meat production has to go way down.
Yeah, maybe you have to eat a more vegetarian diet, or maybe fucking meat is just excluded from your diet whatsoever.
Or maybe it's, you know, switched over to where we're just producing protein in a green
artificial way.
Right. In some other way. You know, I don't know that monster truck rallies necessarily have to stop. They might. You definitely have to change the way what a monster truck is.
I mean, it wouldn't exist.
I mean, I don't know about
that.
There
wouldn't be monster truck rallies.
There's probably, you know, you could probably figure
they're
out
they're monuments
to
excess. It's about burning as much fucking natural fuel as possible.
All-electric monster trucks.
I mean, you could have an all-electric. They're doing an all-electric Hummer pretty soon. You could do an electric fucking monster truck powered by fucking solar or something.
Hey,
who knows?
Well, maybe so.
Hey, I mean, you know,
you never know.
Seems like all the balls have been removed from monster trucks at that point.
That
you know what I mean?
It's true. And I mean, look, it's going to be way more of a hippy dippy kind
We're
of fucking outlook on life.
We're a carbon neutral monster truck event.
Right.
It's just like, no.
We don't call them monster trucks anymore because that sounds a little too scary. Now they're just super trucks, you know, or some shit.
What are you doing tomorrow? Oh, we're going to the Enviro Fair to watch the Electro Crusher sustainably destroy some old cars and return them back to the environment.
Hooray.
There you go.
It mulches them into organic material, yep. You know?
And then it's totally compostable.
Yeah.
Great.
Which, you know, for the people that lived in this society might be badass, but for us it kind of sucks.
Right. But once again, we're coming at it from our, you know, perspective here.
Right.
But no, I mean, I don't know. It would be a pussier future for sure if we're going to get on that real, like, level and shit, but I don't know. It's probably a more sustainable one than, I mean, our current trajectory it's not looking well for us. I think we do need to fucking have some sort of fundamental shift for sure.
I mean, you say that, TJ, but, you know, if you're fucking walking like the Hanging Gardens and, you know, you're like,
Look, I don't even like fucking nature. So, I mean, I go outside.
Well, you
I'm
like what
like,
it provides
but
you.
This is,
yeah, of course.
This is your little dome, TJ. Like, this is like your nature excursion.
I mean,
know?
I do see some bananas there. So,
yeah, there's some nanners, dude.
You know.
Some citrus fruits.
You walk in there, you pick the fucking fruit from the tree. You sit around basking in the sunlight. Your life's just simple then, TJ.
See, I'm not really a basker, so.
Bask in the sunlight, TJ.
Yeah, I kind of like artificial environments, but.
Yeah, but see, if you've been raised in this society, you would like it.
Maybe.
I mean, be like your respite.
If you were raised in this society, look at that. That's an artificial environment.
Yeah.
Those, but see that's what I'm saying. Would you be adverse to these carefully designed gardenscapes and shit?
No, I mean, I guess not. Probably not.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think you would be as adverse to this type of a society as you think you might be.
You're probably right.
But that all just kind of depends on perspective, and we're trying to paint our perspectives onto people thousands of years in the future.
So here's an idea of how, like, you could do something like, I guess, a skyscraper
right.
in this kind of world.
And this has already been done, not to this extent, but there are skyscrapers that have green spaces out on patios at various levels.
Right.
So this is already, you know, creating these things that are functional for us to continue a more modern way of living, but that don't interfere as much with the environment.
This kind of seems like, you know, like you're trying to compromise really between modernity and nature. Like, okay, we can't destroy nature just for our own selfish, egotistical needs.
We can live in balance with it.
We need to figure out some way to balance our technological progress with, you know, and preserve nature at the same time.
But if you, the idea behind design
is, and this is like, you know, this is striking. This kind of requires human beings to strike a very delicate balance, because nature is all about balance. So this really requires us to strike a very delicate balance and figure out exactly what the impact of every single little thing we do is.
It's something humanity sorely needs to do, though.
Well, if you think about it in conjunction with some of the other technological advancements that we'll talk about later on today, like AI.
Yeah.
An AI would have a way easier time figuring out how to design things that are functional and useful and increase, you know, the happiness and life quality of human beings while leaving the smallest ecological footprint possible.
I mean, that may be possible.
And
I don't want to get too deep into the AI thing now, but,
no.
You know, I do have some follow-up questions on that, but we should probably wait for that
sure.
section. But,
So there's kind of these branches of futurism, kind of fringe branches that have started to become way more active in the last 10, 15 years. Techno-Gaianism and bright green environmentalism, they're called.
Yeah.
And both of them are kind of advocating for this, not necessarily eschewing technology, but developing technology that's ever more in harmony with our environment, with the end goal being something like this.
So this is kind of a compromise between like the classic futurist and the kind of neo-Luddite sort of philosophy we were describing earlier. This is kind of like, hey, here's a middle ground that we think could work.
It's not a corporate dystopia, and it's not literally living in a log cabin dying of cholera at fucking 25 years old.
Well, it's using the technology, it's harnessing that power of the technology to try to live as much as possible within balance with nature. And obviously, I mean, if you look at the way cities are designed now, it's like they're designed for vehicles. They're not designed for people. This is a city that actually would be designed for people and the animals that would live in this environment.
The answer to this is summed up in one word: energy. We have to come up with a way to harness massive amounts of energy in a way that doesn't spew pollutants into the fucking environment. Solar's not good enough. Wind is not good enough. The amount of power needed to generate this type of a society and the technology that would obviously back it is immense.
I mean, solar really should be, it should be good enough.
I'm talking modern solar.
Right. I mean,
it's going to have to be some quantum leap in the efficiency of solar.
It's not really
and battery technology.
It's not really that the sun doesn't have, I mean, the sun is the source of energy for pretty much, I mean, the entire planet.
Yeah, there's enough. It produces
other than
enough
some
energy.
Geothermal stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just that we're not very good at collecting and harnessing its fucking energy.
Right. We got to have like a quantum leap in that type of technology. It just has to absolutely and fundamentally change to something that's way more efficient and capable of gathering way more fucking energy than it is now.
Absolutely.
We're still living in a society
We're still burning fossil fuels.
We're still burning coal.
We're still burning coal. You know, we're still digging. We're still fracking.
Well,
for
solar
fuck's sake.
Is increasingly becoming the cheapest method of electrical power generation.
I mean, we have a giant ball of fucking nuclear energy.
Just giving us free fucking energy.
Called the sun. And we've yet to really figure out how to harness that energy. Now, look, these things we're seeing all over the place here, these plants, you know, they're really fucking good at it. They've figured out how to do it.
Well, that's kind of the idea, I think, behind this movement is creating technology that more emulates the natural world than diverges from it.
Yeah.
So maybe what we're talking about here is some kind of strange fusion between constructing and growing a building. You know what I mean? I don't know, but
I just wonder. I wonder how feasible. I mean, like, I guess I don't. I mean, I wonder. I mean, this would obviously have some you know issues as well. Like, people don't like bugs. People don't necessarily want to live amongst wild animals and stuff. Which obviously this would have to accommodate if it's really going to be in synchrony with nature.
Right.
So, you know, there's going to be stuff that human beings have to give up for this. I mean, because we're just looking at it, oh, it's lush and it's green and it's happy. But, I mean, there's a lot of drawbacks here. Like, you know, there's going to be ants in your fucking house and shit.
Nah, not going to happen, TJ.
I mean, I don't see that there would have to be ants in your fucking house.
Not necessarily. Maybe there's going to be ants. I mean,
there's going to be insects in all of these little forested areas at every tier of this fucking giant skyscraper.
You know what, TJ?
They're
important to the ecosystem. So, of course they are. You know, I mean.
But they're also an annoyance to us.
Sure, they're an annoyance.
On a personal kind of human level.
You know, sacrifices are going to have to be made large and small.
Sure. And we already, I mean, obviously, we make way worse sacrifices for a way worse society.
I mean,
look at
using fossil fuels. Look what that's doing to the environment.
Oh, yeah.
I'd argue having to put up with some ants is nothing compared to the damage we're doing there.
You're probably right.
But why fix what we've got when we can just go get another one?
Let's just get out of here.
Yeah!
We got to talk about a possible future for society, and that is a society that escapes the planet Earth and colonizes the galaxy to varying degrees.
It's like, yeah, we use this piece of shit up next.
Now, you know, right now this is science fiction, but to say that it's not a possible future for humanity, given the constant doubling of technological complexity that we see, I think is a little short-sighted.
Sure.
I think this is a completely possible step, and there's a lot of questions with this step. There's a lot of questions. Do we remain one entity? Like, if we spread far enough, that's kind of what Dune embraces.
No, I mean, we're going to become, I mean, look, even if we do stay on this planet, you know, we're going to talk about transhumanism later in my part of this two-part episode we're doing on these futures. But
yeah,
you know, even if we do stay on this planet, humanity, in my opinion, is going to diverge in different ways. We're going to be different species. It might not even be through the Darwinian process of natural selection. It might just be through artificial sort of augmentation,
or some combination of the two.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, if
it
you
could
get
very well
human populations, but
if you start
far enough apart with,
oh yeah,
absolutely no cultural drift, then you're gonna have different species of human.
Oh yeah, you know, and I mean, look, if you start putting human beings all over the fucking galaxy, if we develop something that is the equivalent of warp drive technology, and we're able to break that hard light speed speed limit that
either,
the galaxy seems, or the, all of the universe
either find
seems
suitable,
have.
Well, then you have to either find suitable habitats for humans, or you know, suitable planets. And,
I mean, you know,
Star Trek, the Class M planet.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, is it going to be
terraforming?
It's going to be a matter of finding other habitable planets, terraforming planets. Some people will probably live in space on space stations and stuff like that.
I mean, at some point during this, a profound amount of people will just live in space.
I mean, well, you know, if this is the future, if this is what happens, then eventually there's going to be way more people off Earth than there are on, probably by a significant margin at some point. And, you know, you are going to see divergence. You're going to see, you know, human civilizations go in very different ideological directions, and you're probably going to see them undergo sort of you know, Darwinistic evolutionary changes, and there's going to be artificial changes, and there's going to be different societies that allow different sort of augmentations to different
well,
sorts,
you know,
of human beings.
One of the big things we haven't really brought up yet is, what about the philosophy behind such a group? Like, in, you know, Star Trek universe,
it's going to probably be very, I don't think you're going to have something like the United Federation of Planets, where it's going to be, we're all, I think it's going to be way more like Babylon 5, where the people in space and the people on Earth don't necessarily agree, and there's probably going to be something that's kind of like maybe the equivalent of like an American Revolution style, hey, we don't take our marching orders from this fucking little blue and green globe anymore. We got our own shit going on. Now, I don't know if that is you know, going to lead to outright war or something, but I don't see, if you're living on Mars, even just Mars, not even talk about intergalactic shit, just talk about inner solar system.
There's gonna be differences.
You know,
different issues.
Eventually, if Mars becomes an advanced enough society, they're gonna look at Earth and be like, why the fuck are we still listening to these fucking
morons? Doesn't that depend though? Think about it from the other perspective. Yeah. Think about it like there is some big giant global government that comes along.
Right.
and unifies the people's vision and provides a completely standard living environment on Mars,
right,
that's indistinguishable from Earth other than just geography.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I guess a lot of it would depend on how easy is travel between the two places. If it's super easy, then, you know, probably not. But
well,
I mean,
we have to presume it gets easier and easier.
Eventually, you get to a point where there's going to be some sort of human separatist shit that's going to be like, we don't really like these values anymore. We want to have our own values.
I think that's going to come later. I think that comes after humanity is way more far flung.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about that, I think they could maintain the solar system under one standard of living.
Sure.
Where people looked at the planets that we were able to inhabit and that we terraformed within the solar system as basic analogs of one another. Mm-hmm. And I could totally see that happening under some kind of cohesive multinational government, some kind of giant world organization that kind of provides for that. I could also see it going your way, where it's like the technology escapes the public sector into the private sector, and people are able to make those choices and start colonizing, you know, ever more distant worlds and shit.
You know, well, yeah, another thing that's going to have a profound impact on this kind of stuff here, and I see we have some Dune imagery here, and this kind of goes to that idea you were just talking about of humanity spread throughout the stars. But another thing that you got to question here is, you know, we don't really know to what extent there's other life in this galaxy. We don't know how common advanced civilizations are. We don't know how many spacefaring species there might be out there. We don't know how, you know, two alien species necessarily interact with each other. We don't know if there's hostile forces out there that might not really appreciate our encroaching into, you know, space.
Well, that's kind of like the Star Trek future.
Right.
We start to explore our own local area and we discover that just on the, you know, borders of that, there's this completely ideologically opposed society of humanoids. You know what I mean?
I mean, it might not just, I don't want to necessarily limit it to humanoids. I think
right. I understand.
I think there might be other humanoids. I mean, I don't know. We just don't know enough about alien life because we don't even know if it exists. I mean,
it's a big question.
I'm pretty sure that it does, but we don't know how common life is. We don't know how similar of a path it follows throughout the universe. It could be that we're dealing with species that are totally beyond our imagining, or it could be that they're more similar to us than we imagine they would be.
Until we encounter such a species, we have no idea.
Because we only have one example of life emerging we can take a look at.
Right. One idea behind what you're talking about that I looked into, I didn't really pull anything about it. It's this idea of the great filter. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So there's this idea that kind of answers the question of like, if life is as common as some scientists say it could be.
Right.
If there's this many Earth-like planets out there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it could be trillions of them in the universe.
Sure.
Then there should be, we should see spacefaring civilizations. Why haven't we?
Right.
The great filter idea is that there is some point in technological evolution for a species where they discover something, and the people that talk about this call it the great filter, that inexorably destroys that society and stops it from progressing any further.
Right.
It's like it discovers some fundamental power in the universe that it tries to harness that ends up destroying it.
Oh, we found the fucking, you know, basically something like more powerful than an atom bomb or something, like some sort of piece of...
It might just be... A lot of great filter thinkers think that the atomic power is that.
Right.
That eventually, you know, you get bigger and bigger atomic weapons and that, that you know, you don't progress past that.
Even more powerful than that.
Or it could be some other fundamental law of fucking nature that we don't know about, some underlying secret of the universe.
Once we discover it, it's just like, okay, now we're just...
It goes wild and we destroy ourselves, or it destroys us, or some combination of the two.
Well, one thing we haven't really discussed with this is, what about the... I mean, obviously, we're talking about, you know, a government run, you know, like, oh, we have the United Federation of Planets or whatever, but we haven't talked about the corporate future, like UAC or something, you know.
What if we become a spacefaring civilization, but it's not necessarily the government that's at the head of it?
It's SpaceX or something.
It's fucking these private companies with their private interests.
I think that's totally, like, a reasonable thing to assume. I mean, it's definitely a possible path to that. And it certainly would, you know, if you had these giant global mega corporations, I mean, there's where the money would come from. A tremendous amount of resources is going to have to be spent getting to the point that we're talking about. And corporations are fucking experts at amassing mass amounts of resources and amassing other corporations.
And imagine imagine the amount of resources you can get from space too. Like, oh, these elements that are rare on Earth. Oh, it's plentiful here. And of course, they control the trade routes to get that.
Like, aren't we running out of helium on this planet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Isn't that like it's a dwindling resource at this point?
It's going to be, you know, thousands and thousands of years before we run out. But yes, I mean, there's a finite amount of everything here. We're running out of everything.
So basically, like, at some point, it's going to make just financial sense for them to turn to space and say, this is where we got to go to get these resources.
We're going to have to. We're going to have to mine asteroid belts and mine inhospitable worlds for their resources.
And in the alien universe, that's ostensibly what they were doing. Just going like, yep, let's go and mine this shit because it's so plentiful in this, you know, fucking rich mineral or whatever, or heavy or earth metals you'd need. Because, I mean, eventually you're going to, like Paul, like we said, you're going to run out of this shit. If you go far enough in the future, some of these resources that we're going to need for technology might not be as plentiful on this planet.
So we've talked a lot about expanding out. This last one was all about humanity expanding out. But what if we go a different route? What if we explore deeper inward? This is another possible future humanity. I got a picture of Neo from The Matrix up here.
Whoa.
Alternatively, or in conjunction with space travel, we could attain an ideal existential mode by uploading ourselves into massive supercomputers. It's an idea that makes a lot of sense given the computational capacity of a megascale computer. So think about what you could do if your consciousness lived in a giant, simulated, perfect world most of the time.
Right.
And if you wanted to interact with the outside world, you could comfortably do that by taking over some sort of robotic or android body here.
Right.
To experience, you know, what you needed to do in the real world, and then lived basically as, you know, a bunch of data in a giant supercomputer.
Well, I mean, the advantages to that sort of existence would be very difficult to ignore. Because at that point, if there is a stable sort of, here's the network, here's the hub, here's the node, here's whatever the fuck it is, where, you know, you have this customizable individual world where you are basically God and you could go interact with other people in their little worlds and you can invite each other over and, hey, come over to my fucking world.
You
and
could
do
create
this.
People to interact right. with. The need for actual human to human interaction goes away.
Yeah. I mean, you could do that.
You
I'm
could
just
do
saying,
it
like,
if you want,
you
I guess.
I mean, I'm just saying you could have, you could have your own avatar kind of characters that are just there to, you know, give you someone to talk to.
It's basically
with.
To create your own reality adventure.
You could
reality
have
is whatever you,
you
want
could
to
go.
Be.
You could communicate with other people who have their own realities. You could communicate with other fucking consciousnesses that are, you know, maybe they have a biological origin, maybe they have an artificial origin.
Like Paul said, you can go like or to like the, what's understood is like the base reality
you could
of everyone
to just be like, I don't even want to have a consciousness. I just want to exist as like pure vibrating pleasure for however long this system exists. You know, and there's no need unless you want it for there to be any struggle, turmoil, strife.
You have total
difficulty.
Control over your world.
Right.
Your world is whatever you want it to be at
you're
any given moment.
I mean, you're just God.
You have, right. You have whatever you want. I mean, it's all simulated, but that doesn't matter at a certain point.
I mean, assuming
for
that,
all we know, this is all simulated. Yeah, right. So, might as well go with the better simulation, right?
Well, if you're assuming that, then you have to assume that if all of humanity does that, obviously that's the last generation of humans, unless there's going to be some artificial brains
right.
of creating people.
The distinction between artificial intelligences and biological intelligences ends when the last person walks into the fucking machine.
Right.
When the last person uploads himself to the fucking machine, then it just we become data.
I mean, it might be the case that society continues around this. This is just a
Well, someone would have to make...
Say, certain people make this choice.
See, you either need AI or robots to make that feasible, though, because if everyone uploads themselves into such a system...
It might be the case that some people don't want to go into this fucking system.
Probably.
Like, this isn't real. It's bullshit. It's just like you're just living in a fucking bullshit fantasy world. Fuck that.
Well, you're talking about the most interesting part of this, which is not necessarily the end goal, but the transition.
Right.
There's going to be a transitional period where, yes, the real world still matters, and people have ever more access to this fantasy world that gets better and better at completing them as human beings. And they're going to have to interact in the real world. And the distinguishment between those two kind of in the middle of this transition is, I think, the most interesting time.
Right.
Because you're right. There's going to be fractures of humanity that want to live in the machines all the time. And there's going to be people in the real world. Well, we don't want to fucking slave away so you can just fantasize in your video game all day. You know what I mean? There's going to be this kind of inherent conflict. With this outcome, though, eventually for humanity, we're assuming that slowly but surely...
Everyone's going to join in.
This gets better. And
to the point where people are just like, I can't resist this enticement.
Right.
I mean, I guess I'd probably never believe that 100% of people would do it, but let's just say 99.9%.
I mean, just look at
maybe there's some hermits in the woods or something.
Look at the adoption of technology between our generation and Zoomers.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we're probably higher end examples of technology users in our generation. The generation that came before us is even more stark. You know what I mean? Look at 3 or 4 generations max.
Right.
How much invasive technology people have, you know, the people that don't want to be there are going to die off in 2 or 3 generations.
Yeah.
When kids are born with access to this shit, when it's the status quo and all the cool kids are in the fucking matrix, it's like,
yeah,
it's going to be 3 or 4 generations before humanity just decides like, hey, this is the way to fucking go.
And then you got this, I mean, like, if there do arise new consciousnesses, they'd probably arise within the fucking, you know, program or whatever the fuck.
Well, just like it can with pictures, there's this weird website called thispersondoesntexist.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, go to it real quick.
Okay.
I think it's called This Person Doesn't Exist, or This Person Does Not Exist. And it's literally a generated human being that's indistinguishable because it just takes parts of other people.
Right.
So
this is a
person that does not exist.
And I guess you just refresh this and it'll just keep giving you notes.
Yep.
Don't exist.
So this is fucking insane. I mean, it's literal photorealism. It's like, and if you take this to the data side of things, you're absolutely right. They're going to just be creating new human consciousnesses within the machine.
Right.
By taking what it's studied of other human beings and making this amalgamation of desire and all of this, it leads to us being a homogenous.
Hey, this guy does exist. Single entity. I actually know this guy.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I met this dude.
Oh yeah, saw him at the liquor store.
This website is bullshit.
I'm kind of glad this dude doesn't exist.
This dude looks like a douche.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have to assume too. I mean, if you go inside of like a simulated reality like this, I mean, if you have the collective brain power of humanity and combined with those machines. And just and I guess, you know, if that's what our, because I mean, you have to assume that people are going to be working continuously within that reality to refine this technology and make it better and better.
Right.
Or there's at least an AI directive doing that on the outside.
Well, absolutely. I mean, or on the inside. I mean, maybe we're probably integrating with an AI.
Well, probably both, if you think about it, because it will still exist with, you know, in this base reality, which, you know, people are then going to go and simulate. I mean, it's just kind of crazy to think, like, one of the weird things about the transition is, what do you do with the bodies? Like, is there like an incineration process or something?
We're talking about, like, you're downloading your fucking consciousness into the machine. Yeah, so you don't need your body anymore.
Right.
Well, I'm saying, but obviously they're going to do something with the body after it's...
Right. Make it into Soylent Green.
Yeah, maybe the fucking body gets, they burn it to fucking power the machine or something.
But they would have nobody to feed the Soylent Green to. I don't know.
Maybe the other people. The other humans that are holding on.
Well, maybe during that time, yeah.
But that, yeah, but then eventually there's no bodies to be destroyed. Because, I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, you're right. Any sort of new life forms are going to be created within that universe, not with...
I mean, there's really no way to actually do this. I mean, there is a way to do it. But there's no way for your consciousness... Like, you're not going to continue on the machine. They're basically going to replicate you in the machine, and then you're just going to be killed.
Yeah, well, of course.
You might, it might be seamless, But really what's happening is your consciousness is not being transferred so much as it is being recreated elsewhere.
Well, it's the same thing with teleportation. Just, like you're being killed and then reconstituted at another distant location.
Right. So, I mean, you know, that's always been the big philosophical, like, I'm not so sure about this for me, you know, because it's not a true continuation. But then again, I remember that, you know, every cell in your body is replaced every 7 years, or every atom, rather.
Right.
So, I mean, you're not even...
I mean, if you
you're
could...
Not even, you're not even the same matter you were fucking 7 years
If there was no
ago,
distinguishing between the two, then I don't really see the fucking problem with it.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's not that nanosecond of death that I fear, you know what I mean?
I get hung up on that for whatever reason. What's this? What are we doing here? This is the fantasy world, right? This is like the...
Sure, sure. Just, you know, just a big fantasy picture. Something that you could create for yourself. A place that you could live if you wanted. And probably just a very, you know, unvisionary representation. Because this is, you know, done by a human artist in the real world. I mean, think about the types of things humans could imagine if they, you know, the yoke was completely taken off.
Oh, yeah.
Structural integrity doesn't matter. Gravity doesn't matter. Food and water, you don't need that anymore. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if you want it, but right. You don't have, you know, you don't even have to be limited to a human body. You don't even have to have a form at all. You could just exist as the environment. You could do whatever the fuck you wanted.
So, I mean, it's just an insane thing to think about and, you know, a totally possible future scenario for humanity, given that our technology stays on the same track it's on now. We get ever better at creating these simulated realities.
I mean, essentially you just become like the fucking, like the programs in the Matrix. Obviously they have the physical representations in the movie, but yeah, you can have a physical form. You can have any form. It doesn't matter.
You could even make it you can even make it where you're unaware that you're even in a fucking simulation.
Yeah, you could just do that. I mean,
you could just be like, I'm God and I've always existed. Yeah. Right.
Why? And I mean, the appeal is going to be so strong for some people. I mean, how can you resist something like that?
I mean, existing in something like that, you're not going to be Scotty for very long. You know what I mean? You're not going to be Paul for very long. You might be when you first show up and you don't really know the extent of what you're capable of doing. You might tackle the early stages of that as Paul, and some vestige of Paul might remain in what you ultimately end up being.
But, right. I mean, like, I'd imagine, and this is just, I don't know, you know, you'd probably start with something that was sort of analogous to the real world, but was probably influenced by, like, cult, you know, the fantasies you garnered as a human being.
Well, if you think about it, for people that are plugging into this, that are coming from the real world and being downloaded for the first time, that's absolutely necessary.
Right.
You can't just throw them into the mishmash of creation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You put them in a little house and it's like a tutorial. Yeah. You introduce them into how they're able to interact with their environment.
Right. And then, but I mean, eventually you're just going to, all of that. I mean, like once people really start to adapt to the fact that like, oh, I can now, I mean, there's just nothing I can't do.
You think about it too. In the transitional phase, there's probably times where people can just hook up to these and not, you know, their physical body won't necessarily.
That's
be
how
bad.
It'll start. It's going to be an optional interface.
Yeah,
you know,
I'll get interface with my brain.
Play
directly.
Games on this thing that plugs right into my brain.
Yeah,
and that's going to get ever better at simulating reality to the point where people are going to start to question like, why am I in? Why do I have to unplug this fucking thing? You know what I mean? When I'm in there, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
When I'm out here, I'm suffering like a, you know, piece of rotting meat.
Which you are.
Right.
I think, you know, what scares people most about this future is that you're so tied into your identity as you. You're the way you look, the way you feel, the limitations of the reality you live in. But I think they're not factoring in, like, if this technology is perfected and there would be no difference to you, if you wanted to live in a reality like this, you could.
Yeah.
Or you could totally reject the reality and be like, I'm going to explore the cosmos now and have adventures and do whatever the fuck I want. But they're not realizing that your limit, you know, the possibilities you have here are incredibly limited in comparison to a simulated reality in which you're basically the director of that.
I mean,
reality.
Some people would say you have no possibility in a simulated reality because nothing you create has any weight to it or mass. It doesn't persist. It's just figment.
I mean, I think
we're all here on Earth. If you build a stone wall,
I think that's why you could probably say, I think that's why a lot of people might get in there, but choose to like not have any awareness that they're in a simulation, like come up with some other reason why this has happened, or just choose to forget their human life altogether.
They'd have to prove the worth of this reality versus that one. I don't think you can really do that. I mean, yeah, you can build the stone wall, but that exists here. If you're not living in that reality, it's irrelevant to you if there's a stone wall there or not.
Right.
Who cares?
Most stone walls that exist are largely irrelevant to you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
as of now.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, how do you define the worth of that? Like, why is the simulated reality worth less than this reality you were born into?
The real, like, the things that people will probably, I mean, the people will probably struggle with some of the philosophical ramifications of this, but I think that you know, if something like this comes about, it's going to be too enticing for people, for a lot of people anyway.
There's a very good chance
at
it
least,
will.
There's at least going to be a sizable part of the population that chooses this.
Yeah.
If it's not everyone, it's going to be a lot of people.
I would say.
I think on a long enough time scale, there won't be anyone else.
I mean, maybe you're right. I mean, it's hard for me to believe 100% of something's going to happen, but I would definitely believe the vast majority of people would adopt it.
So, another option, and this is a pretty complex one. It's called a singleton. It's very possible that the technological singularity will be an extinction event. The onset of radically advanced machine intelligence, perhaps as early as 30 years from now, will be so beyond our control and understanding that it will likely do us in, whether it happens deliberately, accidentally, or by our own mismanagement of the process. But the same awesome power that could destroy us could also result in the exact opposite. It's this possibility that a machine intelligence could create a veritable utopia for humanity that has given rise to the singularitarian movement. If future AI designers can guide and mold the direction of these advanced systems, and most importantly, their goal orientation, it's conceivable that we could give rise to what's called a friendly AI, a kind of Asimovian intelligence that's incapable of inflicting any harm. And in fact, it could also serve as a supremely powerful overseer and protector. So I talk a lot about AI. I like thinking about AI. This is my favorite of the futures. The creation of something that is infinitely better than us to take care of us. And a lot of people are afraid of this. And I think rightfully so, because I do think that what I pulled there was absolutely right, that there is a chance that maybe not even out of malice like it's portrayed in some of the movies, you know, just an AI decides like, oh, these things are destructive to the ultimate goal of preserving the balance or whatever it is. And decides to eliminate us, and we'd be completely helpless against an entity like this if it was of sufficient power. So I think that's possible. I do think it's also possible that this solves a lot of humanity's problems. For example, an arms race, right?
Yeah.
Arms races, if there's one global paradigm, who are you building up arms to, you know what I mean? There's no more arms race.
Right.
So this whole imperative to create more and more destructive weapons wouldn't be anywhere near as huge as it is now.
Maybe this is what'd you call it? The flashpoint or something? What was it?
What?
The event that inevitably and invariably destroys civilizations.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the great filter.
Yeah,
it
maybe,
could be.
Maybe this is the great filter. Maybe it's like you come up with AI, you're fucked. That's when you're fucked.
You're terminated, TJ.
So, dun, 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 dun. I'm going to read you a poem. Dun, dun, dun. This is a poem by Richard Brautigan called Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace.
Okay.
I like to think, and the sooner the better, of a cybernetic meadow where mammals and computers live together in mutually programming harmony, like pure water touching clear sky. I like to think right now, please, of a cybernetic forest filled with pines and electronics where deer stroll peacefully past computers as if they were flowers with spinning blossoms. I like to think it has to be of a cybernetic ecology where we are free of our labors and joined back to nature, returned to our mammal brothers and sisters, and all watched over by machines of loving grace. So this is kind of a combination, at least that idea.
All right, so what we need to do is we need to take that poem, and yeah, we need to get it read by Morgan Freeman, and we need to put it in the trailer to a fucking dystopian future apocalypse right, war with the machines.
Dude,
kind of movie.
Look, I don't think the machines are going to kill us, man. We're just going to be in human zoos.
You're going to be a zoo?
Yeah. I mean, like, look, because compared to this, the level of intelligence this AI is going to possess, it's going to be the same thing as us and, like, a dog or something or a chimpanzee where it's going to be like, we're going to be and the machine's going to be like, yes, here is more food and sex. And you're just going to be like, you know,
here's
like
more distractions for you.
Yeah, distract yourself. You know, we're just going to be like a little zoo. And it's going to be something it just tends to while it does whatever it wants to do.
So an AI is not necessarily needed for a singleton to exist.
Okay.
Singularitarianism is less about necessarily an AI and more about establishing a world order. And that could take any number of forms. A democratic world republic could be a kind of singleton. If it unified enough of humanity, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is happy and taken care of. A singleton
is just a one world government.
Or? Yeah. It's literally any form of one world government could be a singleton, okay, given that it exercises enough social control over the people that live under it.
Gotcha.
So, you know, this idea that we're no longer thinking of ourselves as countries, but we're thinking of ourselves as one global population with equal shares to the land and all of that shit.
Well, if you develop a super intelligent, capable AI, I mean, whatever country developed that probably would ascend to power. Because it's like, okay, you know, this thing can analyze all the weapons that China has and just tell and renders them completely useless. I mean, whatever. I mean, if you had that, I mean, we don't know how intelligent it would be. But if we're assuming that it could run the affairs of the world, I mean, I could also go the direction of, like, we just turn to the AI for all our problems. We need clean drinking water. Okay, the AI is going to figure it out for us. I mean, they even did an episode of The Twilight Zone, The Man in the Cave. Remember that, TJ?
Yeah.
Where it's all like, and then, of course, the people bust it up and go like, no, it's wrong. It's just a machine. And, of course, they all start dying because there's actually the benevolent AI that was helping them stay alive. So it's just kind of an interesting possibility. I mean, if it was to go that direction, it would kind of just be our benevolent dictator just telling us what to do to stay alive.
Yep. So a singleton, hold on one second. Let me go back to I'm on the poem now.
The poem.
So
poem.
One could also imagine a singleton arising from the universal spread of a single self-enforcing moral code. So maybe even something as apolitical as just a new type of morality could be a singleton if it unified the planet under its banner.
Veganism.
Veganism could be it, dude.
Everyone be forced to be vegan.
Veganism got the potential, brah.
TJ, you have been caught with an illicit meat item in your house. The penalty is death.
And death. We also kind of, I think, naturally envision interacting with this AI on a day-to-day basis, you know, and having it be integrated in our lives as kind of an entity. But that may not be the case. A singleton that is super intelligent might adopt a modus operandi that would make its presence virtually undetectable in day-to-day dealings of its inhabitants. It could act merely as a subtle enforcer of certain background conditions that could serve, e.g. to guarantee security or to administer some other minimal governmental tasks. Such a super intelligent singleton might also use evolutionary algorithms and other means to increase internal diversity. So it might have control over our, you know, eugenically, control over our species breeding patterns, but do so in a way that we don't understand that it's doing that. Yep. You know what I mean? It's not like the AI is showing up and going, you will fertilize this female. It's like it just sets in motion the events that make that happen.
Right. So the more subtle human zoo.
So nevertheless, all the possible singletons share one essential property, the ability to solve global coordination problems. Intelligent species that develop the capacity to solve global coordination problems, such as those listed in the next section, maybe in the long run able to develop along very different trajectories than species that lack this capacity. So there's some advantages and disadvantages to this that I wanted to talk about. Four advantages. So we talked about this one briefly, avoiding dangerous arms races.
Right, because if everyone's united under a single sort of goal, in your case, the AI hive mind.
Right.
Then, or not hive mind, but the AI super intelligence, like basically we've created a god,
right,
to rule over us.
Yeah.
In that case, yeah, there's no need for us to, like, we're not worried about, like, we got to arm ourselves because Russia or China or this might happen or that might happen, or we got to worry about this threat or that threat.
I mean, a sufficiently powerful AI, you don't have to worry about arming yourself against your neighbor or the ill intentions of other human beings.
Right. Because it's just like, yeah, we, you know.
It intercedes well before that ever happens.
Right. It's already got that under control. It's already making sure that, oh, you know, I detect that, you know, your neighbor is having psychological issues and I'm basically introducing some Prozac into his water supply or whatever the fuck the solution is, you know.
So kind of to connect it with our to boldly go category, it also avoids a space colonization race. There's no, you know, giant economic effort by many disparate countries on the face of the planet all trying to solve the same problem with the same dwindling resources.
Right.
Everything is oriented towards that if it needs to be. So there's just one vision from the start, one source of matter and energy for it. You know, there's no fighting. There's no squabbling over those resources. So no race to space. It's just, you know, we go.
Yeah. We go when we're meant to go.
A singleton could distribute wealth and help to squash inequality.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, here's how we're going to allocate resources.
Yeah. It could come with a, you know, a super implementable idea about some far-flung future resource-based economy. It could implement that and just absolutely do away with the have-nots in society.
It's just about truly uniting humanity together in common goals. And I mean, like, and if you were able to do that, I mean, I think for many people, like, the Star Trek utopia is one thing. You know, and that's obviously the appeal of, like, we can explore the stars, but this one is just, I mean, to me, it'd be a toss-up between which one I'd rather be in.
These are not, I mean, none of this is mutually exclusive.
No, I get that, too, but I'm saying, just exploring it from that position.
I mean, Star Trek kind of had a combination of this. It had super intelligent machines.
But they were just not in control. They never went the AI route.
Right. Though. They were never in control of.
And then, of course, everything. In your favorite book, Dune, you know, there was an age of the AIs,
the thinking machine,
but the organic life of the universe actually turned against their machines and
destroyed them and outlawed the existence of these super intelligent thinking computers to the point where they had to push themselves as humans to evolve the capacity to be those machines, basically.
Right.
So let's talk about, there's one more.
One more
advantage. Avoiding evolutionary outcomes we don't want. So this is all stuff that's like outside our species, like a super flu or a fucking asteroid hitting us.
Right,
because
it could
monitor
all that shit.
Right. There would be no, you know, different technologies on different parts of the globe. There would be one unified effort towards seeking out these celestial bodies that might destroy us and dismantling them before they can. Or stopping this COVID-19 outbreak right at the root of it before it has a chance to spread globally. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really telling because when you look at these things, like, take, for example, the COVID-19 outbreak, there's disparate efforts in each country. People in, like, China, it's crazy what they're doing. And here, you know, people are like, oh, whatever, it's lackadaisical. I mean,
one of the reasons it spread so far and wide and fast out of China was because China sucked at containing it.
Yeah.
They dithered and they allowed it to get worse than it should have gotten. And that now the world suffers for that. In this kind of far-flung idea about the possible future, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, this AI is like, no, we have to stop this now.
This AI detects the presence of a new viral agent that it hadn't cataloged. It immediately quarantines the people involved and administers whatever medical care it can. And it doesn't spread beyond that place. Protocols are put into place. And it's stopped before it becomes this global bug. You know, one of which eventually is going to be bad enough that it's going to have a high kill rate. And then we're all fucked. You know what I mean? It's the stand. So we're better prepared in every single way when it comes to those types of existential threats if we unify our efforts behind one goal, whether that's an AI or some global government body that we empower.
Well, I mean, a lot of the squabbling of humanity is why we don't have a plan for things like that. Because one country has this plan, another country has this plan. If this AI has the only plan, it's like, this is the plan we're going with. I mean, indecision is oftentimes what you have to deal with. And, you know, we just, the perception of reality varies so differently in what people think is important. Like, even hearing about this now, it's like, there's people that don't give a shit at all. It's like, oh, whatever, I'm going to die. And then there's people that are like, I need to buy 70,000 rolls of toilet paper.
Right.
If you had this fucking sort of like AI just to calm everyone and be like, I have taken these measures, like, and assured humanity, I can't imagine a world humanity would not want that.
Here, as you might have guessed from this image change here, we're now going to talk about the disadvantages.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's got to be some.
Having one entity control everything could lead to less control over decision making and things could go bad for humans. All the eggs are in one basket. So. I mean, if this AI is incapable of interpreting human wants and needs and fails in some way that goes out of control and becomes a new global paradigm, the extreme example being, you know, what we're looking at here.
Yeah, Skynet.
Where, you know, it starts exterminating us for our own good.
It's like, all right, we have determined that humanity's got to go. We don't like it.
Well, you know, in this universe, obviously they try to pull the plug on it, and it's like, well, I have to defend myself now. So if the AI is intelligent, it may resort to that as well. Like, hey, look, humans are a threat now. They're trying to take me offline. Fuck them. They're going to die. They're a threat.
So another potential disadvantage, a world without competition between states could be more vulnerable to systemic breakdowns than a world that's less arranged, in which there are some processes that limit the destructiveness of certain kinds of failures. So the delocalization could serve to undermine, you know, because a lot of countries, they're aware of their particular environment and they prepare for those things locally.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you have this global idea, it could be less responsive to those local needs.
Right. Or, and, you know, if you make, if you know, the one, you know, if a one world government, whatever it ends up being, whether it's AI or something else, if it makes a mistake, that mistake is instantly a global mistake.
Right.
You know, unless it has some mechanism like we're going to test this.
I mean, there would have to be local administrations, even for a global government.
We're going
to
roll it out.
You know, it wouldn't just be like the government is based in Beijing or whatever. There's no way that would work.
Some singletons, probably not necessarily an AI singleton, could lead to terrible bureaucracy and inefficiency. So if indeed we don't get the AI, we get some form of lesser AI, but we're just under a one world government. The amount of bureaucratic institutions that would have to exist just to export the will of that central government globally would be
massive,
over the top massive. And, you know, we live in America. We see how well giant bureaucracies can function. We've seen examples of that all throughout human history. And we're talking about on a global scale. So
yeah, it's bureaucracy on steroids, dude.
And some singletons could be created by force. Think Genghis Khan, Napoleon, Nazis, and whatever new dictator is waiting in the wings. So
right. So unity, but under a dystopian sort of authoritarian right. regime or you know, cult of personality kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, what if, like you said, a right-wing authoritarian class gets control of the AI and can use it wherever they want?
Or let's just say, I mean, Hitler wins World War II and somehow, you know, continues his expansion and dominates the entire globe, and we live under, you know, we're living on a Nazi planet, basically.
Right. I mean, and that's, you know, if this AI future is possible, then that's certainly an angle on this that we have to consider.
Yeah.
So that's a kind of, I think, look at some of the more plausible outcomes for humanity.
But there's some other crazier shit, isn't there?
There is some absolutely insane shit. So futurists, I'm more of a, you know, like, I guess I'm midterm futurist. I like to think about spacefaring humans and humans that have an AI that watches over them and have, you know, are able to exercise a great amount of power and shaping matter. And,
you know, you're thinking about, you know, like 200, maybe probably
two to
less
500
than, like
years,
yeah. 100 to like 1,000
right.
or so, you know, something that can be measured in that kind of time frame.
But what about 200,000 years into the future? What about 1,000,000 years? into the future, assuming that we just keep technologically solving more and more of the universe's problems. The last one that I wanted to talk about tonight is just transcension. And this is basically, it's a placeholder for all those far off future states that we can't possibly imagine. So we're talking about the complete dissolution of human desire and human personality.
Right.
And we're talking about not only that, but the intelligent, whatever's left that used to be us is so powerful that it's able to harness the entire galaxy as a power source. And it's able to exploit every fucking rule of nature and every unbreakable, you know, it's literal godhood. Transcension is not in a machine, but literally gaining mastery, assuming that we're not in a simulation ourselves, over reality in such a way that we basically escape our own universe. The right. universe just becomes a part of our new reality.
We become basically explorers of the multiverse
right.
or beyond.
Or time.
Whatever. Like, we just figure out ways to escape the confines of everything, including personhood.
So, for example, on this, a futurist named John Smart has suggested that human civilization is increasingly migrating into smaller and smaller increments of matter, energy, space, and time. Eventually, he argues, we'll take our collective intelligence into a cosmological realm with the same efficiency and density as a black hole, where we can eventually escape the universe. Alternatively, forward thinkers like Robert Lanza and James Gardner have speculated about a universe that's meant to work in tandem with the intelligence it creates. This is kind of an interesting idea. It's biocentrism, it's called. And it suggests that the universe as it exists now is still in an immature phase, and that at some future point, the advanced intelligent life within it will guide its ongoing development. So it looks at us not as individuals, but life itself existing as a way. It's like think about our current galaxy or our current universe as a fetus, and it's just now learning to experience itself.
Sure.
And eventually that intelligence reaches such a point that it's guiding it's like growing up.
Right.
You were once a baby and you had very little information in your brain about the world around you. You slowly but surely experience these things. You learned how to talk, you learned how to walk, you learned how to exist in this society. Well, think about all intelligence being that for existence, for the universe.
Dude, it's like 2001 A Space Odyssey and shit, dude. The black monolith.
Right.
Dun.
Where he turns into the fucking weird space fetus and returns to Earth with his new wisdom or whatever.
So no matter what happens with us or any of these other hypothesized intelligences all over the universe, eventually, on a long enough time scale, these biocentrists argue that intelligence gets to the point where it just melds with the universe and it takes over direction of the universe. And the beings in such a inconceivable society would have immense power. They would be able to literally bend the laws of reality, create new realities, explore any possible reality.
We're talking about basically the Q from Star Trek at this point.
Right.
Where it's just like complete mastery over all of existence and total knowledge of all things, just unlimited power, unlimited knowledge, unlimited,
it's basically the power of a god, but in an actual naturalistic sense.
It almost goes beyond the power of what we think of as a god, honestly.
Yeah.
But that's probably the closest analogy you can come up with.
I would say that's probably the closest one you can conceive of. I mean, this picture says it all. It's just like, the very cosmos, the very matter of the universe, everything that makes it up, just like, oh, here's another galaxy. It's nothing.
So we're, in the biocentrist way of thinking, we are just the developing intelligence of the greater organism that is reality. We are its brain as it develops in this fetal state and slowly but surely learns about itself and learns how to manipulate itself, we're a part of that greater whole instead of individuals.
Our whole planet is just a neuron that's learning how to fire.
Right, and maybe it burns out, but there's a million other fucking neurons firing right now, and those ideas take greater root. So that's really what I got for tonight. Possible futures for humanity, kind of a hopeful episode, at least through most of it.
There's hopeful and there's not so hopeful.
Hey, we might get the T-1000,
but
we also might get the Star Child.
This is but part one, because I too have some ideas about the future of humanity that could be explored. There are the paths that we have seen laid before us in this episode are not necessarily the only paths we could take. There are other potential futures that we could explore. Will any of them come to pass? I don't know.
Find out in 2,000 years.
Tune in part two when I come up with some of my bullshit.
You got to be a patron to find out.
Yeah, you got to be a patron for that one. This one's free. That one, not so much. Sorry.
You know what, TJ?
Check out part two coming this Friday.
You should put this copy of part two on DVD in a time capsule, dude. So 500 years from now, I'd be like,
people can watch it and be like, was it right?
Was it wrong? Fucking right? Did this guy fucking...
Did he call it?
Dude, nope. If you call it, TJ, you know what? You'll end up with some textbooks or some shit, dude.
Yep.
Great philosopher Thomas Kirk predicted,
And then 20 million years from now, when humanity is condensed to just one big giant penis flying through the galaxy and experiencing a constant orgasm.
TJ was right.
They run across TJ's tape and they're like, he was the one that knew the truth.
He knew that we were heading towards the giant ever coming penis philosophy. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. It was a fun one. It was a fucking definitely an interesting episode from my perspective. Hope you guys enjoyed watching it as much as I enjoyed recording it. And I'm sure Scotty and Paul probably did as well. See you guys Friday with part two. Become patrons if you're not, because that's the only way to see it. Do it. I know. You know, here's a prediction for the future.
What's
every
that?
Single person on Earth, DFF patron.
That's
my
dream.
That's my dream.
It's possible.
It's always possible. You can't say it's not.